Thank you for joining us today for Volume 3 of our artist interview series, Articulations. This program is a collaboration between the Margaret Sauss Center for Women and Gender Equity and KHOI 89.1 FM. My name is Nancy Gebhardt, and we are thrilled to introduce you to four amazing artists in our community from whom you'll hear every Monday at 4 p.m. during the month of March. This is the final interview in this volume of the series, and I'm excited to be speaking with Tashina Azur. Tashina was born and partially raised in Davenport, Iowa, by Rowena Azur Vega, mother and artist, and Roberto Vega, dad. She lived with them until the age of 13, when she moved to live with her other parents, Janann Moeller, mom, and Kurt Moeller, dad, in Illinois. Currently, she resides with her husband, Britt Azur Mitchell Jr., her two sons, Hippa and Tibby, her two daughters, Cora and Dorothy, and her dog, Micaiah. They live near her ancestral tribal lands of the Meskwaki Nation. Her photography started over 20 years ago. She is inspired from many different avenues, but mostly by the people around her. Before each session, she likes to decompress by staring at a blank wall or going for a long drive. Her creative process starts there and ends as a beautiful story hanging on the wall. If you ask her what her life's purpose is, she will tell you, family, making an impact on the younger generation, and her art. So welcome, Tashina.
Hi.
I'm so glad to have you here and to be able to talk with you more about your art and your life and share that through this interview series. So one of the things that I really liked about your bio and just the art that you make and the art that I've seen of yours is how you use art to tell stories, and specifically photography. So can you talk to us a little bit about how art and photography help storytelling?
So being an Indigenous woman, storytelling is part of our heritage and part of our culture. So I think, you know, as an artist and as an Indigenous woman, that it's important to get that right. So I think that's what really motivates me as an artist, is to make sure that I'm telling the right story.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I just got really shy. I had all the answers, and now, like, my brain is not
That's
cooperating.
Okay. It's totally okay to be shy, right? But I do love what you're saying about, and maybe what I can ask the follow-up is, using that phrase, like, telling it right, right? Why is that so important?
I think that a lot of the times we don't, as Indigenous people, we don't usually get the platform to tell our side of the story. And so when we do get that platform, it's kind of, you don't want to, because all of the tribal nations across, you know, the U.S. are different. And so you want to make sure you're not trekking on another tribal nation and trying to tell their story for them. So I think it's more like getting it right, as I see it, as a Meskwaki Anishinaabe woman. That's how I see it. That's how it pertains to me. And that I'm not a voice for all Indigenous people, but just my own voice for what I have experienced for, as, you know, a Meskwaki woman.
Do you combine in your art, do you combine words and visuals, or is it really storytelling through kind of the visual narrative?
So I do a little bit of both, but I'm really excited to see a lot of the language programs that are popping up in tribal nations, because that was, you know, a lot of tribal nations have lost their, you know, that part of their culture, that part of their history. And being able to see that and being able to add that to the art, I think is really important, just so that people still understand that that is a struggle, that is an issue within tribal nations, that they're still trying to reclaim that. So being able to add that to some of my art and my photography, I think that really helps show that struggle, but that we're still here and we're still trying to reclaim that part of us, for those of us that don't speak fluently because of what had happened.
Yeah. Yeah, I grew up in South Dakota for a time, and a good friend of mine from elementary school, actually, followed, now we just stay connected on social media, but she's been involved in a Lakota language school up there, and I know that's been really important there too. And like you're saying, just being able to access that language again and reclaim it and bring it back into the contemporary space when it had been taken away for so long, right?
Yeah, I think that's really, really important for a lot of mainstream people, because I do have access. I have a lot of following for a lot of people that are, you know, mainstream, and basically being able to say, hey, it's okay if you don't know your language. There's still time. You can still learn. And I hope that that's what my art can, like, inspire them to reclaim that part of them that maybe they lost.
Yeah. And I think maybe that's also a beautiful way that the combination of visuals and words works, right? Because if they don't have that language, they still can feel and see and appreciate and learn that story from the visual that you create, which is, I think, a really beautiful thing. When you approach subjects, right, like, or the people that you're, because it's most often portrait photography or figurative photography, I think, that I've seen from you. What is it that you're inspired by? Like, how do you go about kind of, like, what inspiration kind of leads to the composition of your photo? Like, what are you looking for?
So I know I shared a little bit to you offline that I have ADHD. So I have a lot of chatter in my brain, and sometimes it's really hard for me to figure out what it is that I'm trying to say or what it is that I'm trying to do. So I'll just stare at a wall, and then I'll say, okay, what is it? It's a way for me to quiet my brain from all of the day-to-day things that I have to get done, because it's always running through my brain. So if I can stare at a wall, then I can see the visuals of what it is that I'm trying to do. If I can go outside and be with nature, or if I can go for a drive, I can figure out what is it that I'm trying to say. And so I can't hear what somebody's telling me unless I quiet my brain first. Sure. So that's where the story has to start. I have to be silent to hear what it is that they might be trying to tell me. Mm-hmm. And then I usually ask them questions. Hey, tell me a little bit about your life. What is it that makes you happy? Tell me a funny story. You know, what really inspires you? Is it your mom? Is it, you know, what is it around you that's so inspiring? And then usually, you know, we'll collaborate, we'll talk. Hey, let's do this. What do you think about this? Or, you know, what idea is it that says that I'm trying to capture you at this point in time? Because mm-hmm. everybody is, like, just passing through some space at some time. And so at that point in time, it's like capturing that milestone, that story. So how do I put that in a picture mm-hmm. to capture a funny story? Not really funny, but this kind of maybe might help you explain. So last night, my daughter, I was working on one of my clients' pictures, and my kids always come up and they always look at my pictures. What are you doing, Mom? Oh, let me see. Like, giving me feedback. Mm-hmm. What do you think? Do you like this? And I love black and white. And so whenever I show my kids, what do you think? Black and white color. They're always like, no, color. And I'm like, no way, the black and white. And then we'll just go back and forth. Well, last night, my 5-year-old came up, Cora. And she's sitting there and she's like, I want to see your pictures. And so I showed her. And then I showed her one, and it's where he was laughing. Mm. And she's like, how did you get him to laugh like that? And she's just grinning and smiling. And I said, that's the point of that picture.
Yeah.
Like, if it makes you feel good, I did what I was supposed to do. And so then I was telling her, like, that's what his mother will remember mm-hmm. is his laughing. And yeah. So,
that's a beautiful story. And I love how connected your children are to your whole process, right? Yeah. That's such a beautiful part of that too. And to see, even as you're still editing these photos that they want to be involved with that, but that also you can, you see their response, yeah. right? And that what a beautiful validation from her for that photograph and that moment that you captured.
Absolutely.
That's wonderful. Yeah. So you've already talked about this a little bit, especially as being an Indigenous woman and wanting to capture stories and doing it right. And then even just, I think, in this most recent story about capturing joy, right? And in that moment and making sure that that memory and that story of that moment is joyful. I just was wondering if there's more that you could say about how living near your ancestral tribal lands informs your art making. Is that something maybe that changed as you've moved back or moved closer, or just wondering to know a little bit more about how that affects the art that you do.
I think it has to do more with like power. So it's not the power in a sense of I have power over you. I think it's more of being where, you know, a lot of the things that had happened in your like blood memory. Because like for Indigenous people, blood memory is like really important. It's like how we pass down everything, you know, because we are storytellers. We didn't write a lot of our stuff down because that's almost like taboo. Mm-hmm. You had to learn how to remember everything, how to remember your religious practices, your ceremony, your language. All of that is like written in your blood memory. Mm-hmm. And so being near there, because, you know, I'm from two tribes, but my grandmother had such an influence on my mom. That was more of the way we were raised, this more Meskwaki heritage, even though, you know, my grandfather was from Turtle Mountain. He decided that Meskwaki was the way to go. So they would come back and they would go to powwows, and we more navigated towards that because North Dakota is really, really far.
Yeah.
I finally went and visited this past summer when I took my son. And it was like 16 hours in a car. It yeah. was because it's like right there next to Canada. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, this is not.
It's not an easy place to get to for
no,
sure.
Yeah. No, it's like in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. I thought Tama was in the middle of nowhere. Belcourt, North Dakota is literally in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
So that blood memory, I think, is what really helps inspire. Because there's so many different things, like I help cook, which is a cultural thing. I help cook for certain ceremonies. And I am really inspired, like, because I help my aunts. And when we go in the Udanigan and we're cooking, like, just watching their hands. And so, like, I have a really thing with, like, other people's hands. Mm. I feel like it tells their story of all of the things that they've done in their life. So I really like really wrinkly and old-looking hands. Mm-hmm. And then, like, silver hair. I love, like, old, wrinkle. I just love old people. I think it's amazing that they got to an age where they've seen so much. Mm-hmm. And, like, their eyes and everything. So I think
they carry all of that with them.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And so I really love that. And that really helps inspire me by just knowing that blood memory that's there, knowing yeah. that they've carried through their generations to get where we're at now.
Yeah.
And how do I share that? How do I show that? How do I appreciate that? You know, we're not allowed to take pictures inside the Udanigan. It's taboo. You're mm-hmm. not allowed to. So if I can use some of what I've learned from going in there and then coming out and taking pictures, that really does help inspire whatever I'm trying to do at that moment.
Yeah. Well, and you grew up with artists in your family too, right? So is that something that growing up around art that did you always know you wanted to be an artist?
I was never an artist in yeah. the sense of what people think of artists.
Yeah.
So my mom could do it all. She was like painter. She could draw. She could, you know, sing. She could anything she could do. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. And my sisters, because I have seven of them, they could all draw and they could all paint and they could all, you know, sing. And they were all like fantastic. And then when I would try to draw, they would laugh at me and say, look, Tashina's stick figure has scoliosis. Or yes, yeah. Because they were all crazy and, you know. And so I never really considered myself an artist.
Yeah. Especially though, like in comparison to
everybody yes. around me. Yes. Yeah. No, that was never. I just was like, I'm not an artist. My mom would always tell me, no, you are. You are an artist. You just got to find what it is that you're good at. And so I would sit with her because I learned to bead when I was eight years old. And I would sit with her and I would watch her bead. And then I would say, hey, can I learn to bead? And she would say, sure. And so she taught me to bead. I learned how to bead when I was eight. Mm-hmm. So that was, I guess, my first taste of being an artist and being a creative. And then I just figured that, you know, artists live this lifestyle of being an artist. You know, there's that romanticize. And I'm like, I am not an artist. Yeah. I'm logical. I don't create the way other people create or how I think they're supposed to create. Mm-hmm. Then in high school, I took a photography class and I fell in love with the darkroom and the process because I love processes. I think a lot of neurodivergent people love processes. It kind of helps them move through life a little bit better. And so understanding photography in that way really helped me understand that I could be creative, that yeah. I could be an artist, because there were so many different processes in making a photograph.
Yeah.
And I think that really helped me understand that. So that I love that part of photography. And if it could be the old days, that's probably why I love black and white.
Yeah.
It's because that was my first taste of photography, was black and white.
And being in the dark room and absolutely. Watching that. That's such a wonderful process too. It's so rewarding, right? To put the paper in the chemicals and see the image like absolutely. Just appear on the paper, right? There's almost like a magic to it that's like, but that follows this like logical progression, right? It's, which I totally appreciate. I'm someone who's always been arts adjacent, right? But I still don't consider myself an artist. And some people, they're like, well, that's silly. But I don't actually like make much. I just am like a big art appreciator.
Yeah.
But it's similar to what you were saying, is that just the idea of being an artist is not at all how my brain works, right? Like, yeah. Or how we think of the idea of being an artist as this just endlessly creative person that imagines all these things in their, you know, head and then can put them on paper in one way or another. And that's not how my brain works.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's how my mother was.
Yeah.
Like, she would walk up, because she could also sew, and she would sew beautiful regalia for powwows. And she would come up to somebody and she would be like, how did you do that? And she'd be like, can I look? And then mm-hmm. she would look at it and then she could go home and recreate it just like that. And I'm like, how did you do that? Like, yeah. I would be like, what's step one? Like, how did you get from there to there? All you did was look at it and
yeah.
got it. Like, how did that even happen? That's pretty amazing. So mm-hmm. being around somebody who could do that mm-hmm. was like, I am not an artist.
Yeah.
There's no way. Because all of my siblings are like that. My sister, she's just like my mother, and she's the exact same way. She'll come up with ideas and I'm like, dang, how did you even get from there to there like that? Like, so.
But I think that's an important thing. And I think even with what you've been sharing earlier too, is that all of our brains operate so differently, right? And we can't ever expect that there's one way for anyone to be an artist or that there's one way to go about anything, right? Because every single person has such a different way of moving through processes or not. And some people are so much more comfortable with just like, whatever happens, right?
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
And that's, you know, that's not me either. So kind of related to that, and you've talked about it a little bit, but this process that you have of staring at a blank wall or going for a long drive, and you were saying that with your ADHD, that's something you need to kind of focus yourself to to be able to look for the story you're wanting to tell through your art. Can you talk a little bit about how you came to know that about yourself? Because I imagine that wasn't it took you a while to get there.
It took me a really long time to figure out how to, because if you look at some of the stuff that where I started, like, because sometimes I'll just go back to see how far my art has developed, and I'm just like, I'm all over the place. Like, why? That's not what I was trying to say there. So why is it looking like that? So I think I just I had to, how I found that out. One day I was trying to prepare for a client, and I couldn't stop my brain from like, oh, you should do this. Oh, you have to go pick up your children. Oh, you have to go, like, it was all over the place. And I'm like, how do I get my brain to stop so I can focus? Because my mom didn't believe in medication, so I was never given any medication to like stop my brain chatter and like really hone in my focusing. And so, like, it's not that I can't focus, it's just that I'm trying to focus simultaneously on a million things at once.
Yeah.
And so I had to learn, and I can thank my son Tibby, because my son Tibby also has ADHD. And I had to tell myself, well, how is it if I was to explain or help Tibby, how would I be able to do this? Like, to show him, what is it that I'm trying to say here? How can I use, because I had to teach my brain how to help my son, which was hard because we're both like wandering around, and my husband loves to make fun of us because we're all over the place. We're just everywhere, can't get it together. And he's like, God, you and Tibby are just, I don't understand how you guys function in the world. And so I'm like sitting there, how do I tell a story? If I was Tibby, how would I give myself a pep talk to get myself to where I need to get this picture to go? And, you know, I started learning more about ADHD and how I could help him. And in that, it helped me learn more about what was going on inside of me, because, you know, ADHD is hereditary. It's passed down. And then mostly from the mother is what they say. They don't know, you know, research or whatever. So, you know, just knowing that, trying to help him, and that's where I came across, well, what is it that calms me? What is it that soothes me? What is it that helps me really hone in to what I'm trying to tell that story, how I'm trying to tell that story in my pictures, you know, and just having those conversations with my son. Because it's easy to talk to him because he's just like me. He understands me. I understand him. He's 16. So having those conversations, seeing how excited he gets on, because the ADHD people have something that's called hyperfocus. And it's where we focus in on one thing and we can't stop until we're like satisfied. We just, it's go, go, go on that one thing. And his one thing is Godzilla and dinosaurs. And so I'm like, how is it that he, you know, how do I get him? And, you know, just talking to him. Well, mom, you got to just listen to what they're trying to say and, you know, try to figure it out. What is it you're trying to do? And so just taking a cue out of his book. Okay, well, sitting there and then just, okay, how do I calm myself? And that's when I realized that every day after work, I came home, sit on my couch, and I would stare at the wall to like write out what was going on in my brain. And then I was like, you know, the only other time I get this feeling is when I'm driving in the car and I'm just driving to nowhere and just driving around.
Yeah.
So that's when I, so like it was a combination of a few different things that really helped me figure out the part of that process so that I could hone in. What is the story here? What am I trying to say? Well, I can't do it with all this chatter in my brain. So that's basically all of those things in a roundabout way with my ADHD explanation is how.
Oh, that's wonderful, though, especially like just building that awareness about yourself, right, as a person and how that impacts your ability to create art too, right?
Yeah.
And I think that certainly, I don't know, I guess maybe the follow-up would be to ask, did you notice a difference in your photos?
Yes. Like,
yeah.
I did notice, because it made more sense when I would take a picture and I would look at the picture and I would say, is that what I was trying to say or convey about that person? Or in some of my pictures, it's really, really hard to try to get the story out. So for example, my powwow photography, they move so fast.
Yeah.
And so like, of course, you want to get the cool action shots where they're looking like ninjas and they're jumping up in the air.
Yeah.
And so, like, how do you take that and figure out what you're trying to say there? And so when I would watch them dance and I would try to imagine what is it that they're thinking about? Because when I dance, it's like I can't breathe because I'm out of shape. And those are the things that I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
And so, like, I'm just, I guess, romanticizing in my brain that maybe they're thinking, oh, I look beautiful and I look so eloquent. And, you know, and so like when I mix the words with the picture and I add the words on top of the picture, or I don't know if you remember those,
but
that was kind of where I was coming with, like coming from, oh, what are they thinking about? And what am I thinking about? What is it that I see that I want to say that I see here? I'm not sure what they're thinking. I know when I dance what I'm thinking, but like, yeah. And watching my other sisters when they come, because they dance jingle, and they'll come off and they'll be like, oh my God, did I look graceful? Was I, you know?
Yeah.
And so a lot of those words, that's where some of those words came from. But then at the same time, I came across, I think it was like a treaty, and I wanted to add that and bring that attention to one of the photos because, yeah, they look so beautiful, but don't forget, you know, all about the broken treaties.
Yeah.
And that was another piece where I was trying to bring something else in. And if only, you know, if you started putting the pieces together, even though they were all scrambled, it came from an actual treaty and how important that is for us to be Indigenous people. And have that sovereignty and be able to say that in a photograph.
Well, and those photographs were so beautiful, and I got to see them in an exhibition. And I love how you've just described them, because when you're there to look at them, you can look at them from a distance, and they're really striking black and white photos that do emote, right? Like you do feel from just the representation of the person in each photo. And then as you get closer is where those words start to come out, right? And so there's kind of like multiple layers of, because you don't see the words right away, I guess is what I'm getting at. And so then there's this kind of like multiple layers of interpretation and interaction where then it's kind of like you're adding that challenge to the viewer, right? Mm-hmm. Especially as a white person viewing this image of an Indigenous person dancing at a powwow. And my first reaction is like beauty, right? Like, or graceful, or these other words you're describing. But then to get closer and be confronted with the broken treaties and genocide, you know, all of these things that that are so...
They're white. Lying underneath. Yes. It's like that iceberg, you know, you have all the fun, you know, and then underneath there's all these, like the tragedy, but also the beauty, because at the end of the day, and I always say it, you know, we were resilient enough to survive.
Yeah.
And so like, that's what you're seeing, 1,000 years of that resiliency today, even though you have all of that iceberg underneath of everything else that is what Indigenous people are. But to me, I see it as beautiful because, you know, we couldn't have came through space and time from there to here without all of that. Even if it is like can be a sad story, but at the same time there's always beauty and sadness.
Yeah.
And it helps us move forward in a good way.
There's that wonderful laugh that you captured in a photo last night. Right?
Yeah, that's a
wonderful thing. You did say that part of your life's purpose is to make a difference on the younger generation. Can you talk about what that means to you and maybe why you've come to that purpose or part of that purpose?
So by day, I work for the Meskwaki Youth Program. And how I fell into that was actually went to an all-Native college in Lawrence, Kansas, Haskell Indian Nations University, where I have my bachelor's in American Indigenous Studies, and which is an art degree. Along with that, you know, I did a lot of science, and that's where I really honed in more of the fundamentals of photography. One of my old professors, I took all of the photography because I really loved doing it. And at that point in time, I didn't know what I wanted to do. If I could make a living off of photography, if I could, you know, or I went to Haskell thinking that I would go back and work for my tribe or go back and work for a tribal nation to help with all of those things that we just talked about, broken treaties, you know, so some of the things that you can see in my art. And so going to Haskell and my senior year, my practicum placement was with the Palathe Center, which was an all-Native center there in Lawrence. And I was in charge of the youth photography and the bead working classes. So that was what I was doing for my practical work. And so that was the first time I really learned how to be a teacher, I guess you could say, and use both of my art forms. And I was just really inspired by the youth and how they see the world and how they're so innocent and like everything is waiting for them. Like they can do anything. Like the sky's the limit. And so like just being that adult person in their life that believes in them, I guess you could say, and what that would look like for them and not impact them in a way where it's, you know, me telling them what they have to do. It's no, what is it that you're trying to do? What is it that is your purpose? I'm just here to help guide you. And so I think working for the youth program, that's really where I've learned how important it is that as adults that we give our, especially our indigenous youth, their creative avenue to support them. Because I don't know that I really had a lot of that support when I was growing up. There were, and I do say this, there were people in my life at points in time, which is where I come with, you know, when I take a picture of somebody and they're point in time that I remember this person really helped me at that point in my life. And if it weren't for them there, like my boxing coach helping me, I don't know that I would have graduated from college, which means then I would have never went to college. And then, you know, my professors in college, there was a few of them. One of my botany professors, Chuck Haynes, he was really helpful in me learning more about plants and understanding about the natural side of what it means to be indigenous and the medicines that come from those plants. And then my, you know, photography teacher teaching me about Cecil Dawes. He's passed away now, but he really helped me hone into the photography portion and what it is that I'm trying to tell with my stories. And then, you know, my American Indigenous Studies professors, learning those people in my life really telling me you need to hone in on what it is that you're trying to do instead of, you know, because as Indigenous people, we all have a purpose. We just don't know what it is yet. Whether it's telling stories, one of my mentors now, Suzanne Buffalo, she always like puts it in a way so that I can understand you know, what it means to be a good relative. So I think that that's learning from those individuals and having those mentors in my life at those points in time has really helped me understand what my purpose is.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Yeah.
To help, you know. Give me a second.
Sure.
I think it's, you know, important to know that about yourself, to be able to, I guess, you know, I guess that's kind of where my art has taken me, is because of those mentors, because of those people that were put in my place. And I guess I just want to help those kids along as well.
Mm-hmm. And as a way of honoring those experiences that were so important to you.
Absolutely. Right?
And developing your art, your identity, your understanding of self. And I love what you said earlier too about you're not there to tell them, you know, what to make or what to, how to do it. It's just to help them understand the skills, the maybe the technical parts of it, for them to then decide, right? How am I going to use this? How do I want to use this? What is the story I want to tell, right? It's about building, not for them, but allowing them to grow their own like self-determination, right? To say like, this is, like you're saying, this is my purpose and this, these skills will help me get there. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think, sorry, I didn't mean to be emotional.
No.
I get a little emotional sometimes when I'm talking about people that really impacted my life. I guess it's like a way of me honoring their spirit. Like, even though they're like, a lot of them have not passed, a couple of them have, but like honoring, honoring those memories and those stories that they've shared with me to make me the person that I am. So I'm not even an emotional person, which mm-hmm. is really weird, but those are like the weird things that can make me emotional is like just thinking of those memories of, you know, how they've helped me,
mm-hmm.
you know, move through time and space. And
I think I can feel the gratitude, right? Like that's really what that emotion is coming from.
Yeah.
It's just like really, really deeply felt gratitude.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So thank you for sharing all of that and for being vulnerable to talk about so many of these things, right? That have influenced you, that have influenced your art. I've known you for a while and have admired your art for a long time and really appreciate what more I've gotten to know from you today through this conversation and that you are willing to share it with me and then with everybody else on the radio too. I just wanted to give people an opportunity to connect with you and your work. Could you share like where they can follow you or keep up with what you're doing?
Sure. My website is just my name, tashina.art. It's funny because, you know, I never considered myself an artist, but I made sure I put art as, you know, instead of .com, wanted to make sure people, I don't know, to help boost that I am an artist. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But yeah, you can.
For yourself and for others, right?
Yeah, if I am an artist or not. Yeah. I am trying to work with a curator. She out of the University of Louisville in Kentucky, I believe. It hasn't been said yet if I was going to be in her show, but I have some more artsy stuff that I plan on. Hopefully I can get my work out there. More of the actual, you know, fine arts, mm-hmm. the area that I really want to push my work into. Right now I just take, you know, clients for senior pictures and family pictures and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So, well, not just.
No, I'm not. Like, I'm very appreciative to everybody that, you know, wants to work with me. So yeah, that's really important. I didn't mean it like that.
But no, I didn't want you to feel like you were putting that part of it down, because I think that's an incredibly wonderful part of the art too.
Oh, yeah.
That I think there's actually a pretty strong bridge between what you might consider your more fine art and that portrait photography that you do too,
yes.
right? Like there is a strong connection. It's just maybe a little bit of a different intention, right? To start.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And like,
It's, you know, more of what I'm hoping to capture, you know, what my clients want, obviously, with when they hire me, what they're wanting with my flair.
Yeah.
Mostly because, yeah. you know, when you're paying for something, you want to get what you pay for.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah. Well, I'm excited to see where your photography goes and look forward to following upcoming exhibitions and other work that you're doing. Just wanted to say thank you again for being here and for sharing with us and being part of this series. It was really wonderful.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for listening to Articulations, brought to you by the Margaret Sloss Center for Women and Gender Equity and KHOI Community Radio 89.1 FM. Our interview is edited by Rosie Rowe. To round out the hour, we invite you to sit back and enjoy a selection of songs picked by Tashina. I will add that some I have danced to and have sincerely enjoyed that brought back some of my 90s memories. You can find the full Articulations playlist on Spotify or on the Sloss Center website.